Well, that's pretty honest, wouldn't you say? That's the kind of honesty that we're trying to talk about in this series. Ever since I heard that line, that first line of that song, I've got a God-shaped hole, and it's infected. I would imagine that in a room this size, wherever you find yourself today at any one of our churches, I would imagine that there are some of us that can relate to that. Maybe you've been there before. Maybe you know someone who has. But the question is, what do we do with that kind of honesty? Does God really allow, I should say, does he really invite that kind of honesty? Last week, we kicked this series off with this big idea that there really is something for all of us to gain in this kind of honesty. Until you and I are fully honest to God, you will not experience God fully. Until we're fully honest with him, we just won't experience all of him like he wants us to in this life. Now, we all know that we'll never really be able to fully experience God, but there is a relationship with us that it seems like he longs to have. And just like any relationship, if you bring 10% of yourself, you'll experience about 10% of the possibility in that relationship. If you bring half yourself, you'll experience about half of a relationship. But if you bring all of you, that's when you'll experience all of who God is and all that he wants to allow you to experience. We said it in another way, that being honest to God, when you're honest to him, it allows you to have a closer relationship with him. That if it is a relationship that he really does desire, it begins with you and I being honest to him about what you're dealing with and how you feel and what you're thinking through and what you're excited about, what you're struggling with, what you're frustrated about. And if you can find the courage to be honest to him, that's when you'll begin to experience this potential of a relationship that he wants to have with us. But it really does begin with us. Over the next few minutes, what I want to convince us all of really revolves around this word right here. This word is doubt. What about my doubts? What about the questions that I have about God, about life, about myself, about what's going on or what I see around me? What am I supposed to do with those? What I think we're going to find is that by the end of this, I want to give you a way to handle your doubt. And even the way I'm going to submit to you to handle it, you're going to doubt. You're going to think, I would imagine, no, that really can't be true. But I really do believe that God offers us, he extends to us an invitation for us to bring our doubts to him. And then he actually gives us a way to actually soothe and work through and comfort, not answer, but make sense of maybe the doubts that you and I find swirling around us. For the sake of our time, I want to define doubt as this right here. When what I feel obstructs what I know, when what I feel, the emotion that has surfaced because of what I see, when it gets in the way of what I know to be true. Have you experienced any doubt lately in your life? I would imagine at some point you have. For me, I'll give you just a simple example of where I remember feeling doubt in my life because of what I was seeing, what I was feeling was obstructing what I know to be true. When I first met my wife, Jenny, we were living in Texas, both of us were. We were graduate students at a grad school in Dallas, Texas, and a family friend of mine had asked me if I would take their son, college-age son, down to Waco, Texas, drop him off at Baylor University. And so I said, sure, I'll do that. And so I convinced Jenny, we had only known each other for about a week, but I convinced her to ride along. So I thought this would be a great way to get to know her, and I was interested. I had been trying to holler at her, you could say. And so I was trying to convince her to go on this about an hour and a half down, hour and a half back trip. And so she said yes, and which I saw as a positive sign, right? Okay, so I'm not a complete idiot, though I am an idiot. So in the car on the way down there, we had a nice time. Three is not always the best number around a date. And so on the way back, though, it was just the two of us. And so we had I thought we were having a fantastic time. Great conversation, a lot of laughter. We were really talking about each other's lives and finding commonalities. And a mutual friend of ours was actually celebrating their birthday. And so on the way back into town, we dropped by the party and hung out with some friends there. And then at about 10:30 p.m., I'm taking her back to where her car was the parking lot that she had left it in when we jumped in the car to go in the first place. And I was feeling it, y'all. I got to be honest with you. I was feeling it. And I thought, well, you know what? I'm just going to put it on out there. I'm just going to tell her how I feel. And so I just looked over to her. We were about 5 minutes away from where she had left her car. And I just looked over to her and I said, look, I'm into you. I said, I am into you. And I could tell she was a little taken back by that. And I said, no, I mean, I am interested in pursuing you. I would like to do this more often, not just once more. Like, I want to do this on a regular basis. Would you be open to that? And she looked at me like you would have thought I would have just slapped her mama or something. I mean, she was like, what? She was like, we've only known each other a week. I mean, we just like spent a little bit of time together. Like, I don't really even know you. And I was like, look, I don't have a ring in my pocket, all right? I'm just saying I would like to continue to do this. So we get to where her car was, and she just looked at me, and she goes, I got to think about this. And she opened up the door and got out and closed the door. And that was it. So I went to bed that night thinking like, wow, I have royally messed this up. I mean, I saw an opportunity, I took the shot, and I missed. Anyone ever been there before? Some of you have, I would imagine. The next morning, I woke up, and the doubt started to come. You know, I started to think, oh, no. Like, I had a good thing, I had a good opportunity, and I've blown it. This is over. This is awful. And then I started looking myself in the mirror, being like, what have you ever done in your life, you know? You are such a loser. I mean, you don't deserve anything. Has anything ever gone right for you? The answer is no, and you know whose fault it is? It's your fault. You know that feeling where you start telling yourself all this stuff that's wrong and you can't think of anything you've ever done right? And so I just had the doubts swirling. Why? Because I was feeling something that was obstructing what I knew to be true. About 5 p.m. that evening, I get a text from her that says, hey, what's up? And I was like, oh, yeah. We are back up in this. And the rest, some would say, is history for her. So I would imagine whatever area of life that you're in where you feel like there's doubts that are surfacing, it's probably not comical. I mean, it probably is significant, specifically in the realm of a relationship with God. And for those of you who are not a Christian, if you consider yourself someone who you're just kind of interested in the God thing, but not really sure where you stand, what you believe, I think today, I hope today, will be really helpful in letting you see how I think God should, how I think God encourages us to handle our doubts. See, the answer that so many people give is just, well, just believe and get over it. And it's just not that easy. We all know that, right? I mean, what do you do when your doubts around who God is, and not just his existence, but his character, what do you do when those are a significant obstacle between you and a relationship with him? For me, I tried to articulate as clearly as possible, as honestly as possible, what my doubts really are. Because I too have doubts. This is not just a thing for people who don't consider themselves Christians. This isn't just a thing for people who are new to the faith. I mean, this is a thing for any of us and all of us. So for me, this question really does articulate where I feel like my doubts are. Is it possible to know God even if I spend a large portion of my conscious existence pondering whether he is even real? That's how I feel. I mean, is it really possible to know God, to have a relationship with God, if I sit around and think large amounts of time about whether or not he's even real? Here's a quote that I found that I find to be very honest. I think it's going to surprise you who actually said this. Where is my faith? I mean, even deep down, right in, there's nothing but emptiness and darkness. And my God, how painful is this unknown pain? It pains me without ceasing that I have no faith. I dare not even utter the words and thoughts that crowd in my heart and make me suffer untold agony. So many unanswered questions live within me, and I'm afraid to uncover them. You know who said this? Mother Teresa. I mean, how shocking is that? That someone that lived the kind of life that she lived with that much, you would think, confidence and conviction, that did so much to help other people, that gave her life away on a regular basis, could be plagued with swirling doubts and emotions too painful to even articulate. See, unfortunately, whatever your unanswered questions are, and maybe your unanswered questions are not about the existence of God. Maybe it's about, does God really care? Is God really paying attention? Is he aware of what's going on in me and around me? If he does care and he is good, then is he able to actually step in and help? I don't know what your unanswered questions are, but I would imagine that this is true for all of us, that doubt can too often feel like a barrier to a relationship with God. That doubt can feel like a barrier and obstruction to a relationship with God. When I think about doubt, this is the way that I think about doubt. This illustration for me brings a little bit of clarity to the way doubt can feel. You familiar with an eclipse? I would imagine you are. It's a beautiful thing. We don't get to see it that often in life, but let me just give you an elementary explanation of what an eclipse is. This is, everybody knows what this is? Yeah? Just starting with the basics, you know, don't want to assume anything. Let's just say for the sake of our illustration that this is God, all right? And that would make sense. I mean, what else is going to illustrate God other than the sun? All of our life revolves around the sun. The sun does not revolve around us. And let's just say that this is the earth, all right? I've been working on a perfect circle all week long. That's not very good, but let's just, for the sake, see if I could draw earth here. I don't know, that's close to not right. I don't know, how does that look? Can you tell that's the earth? Some of you are like, I don't know, is that Mars or what? That's pretty, you know, you and I are like right here, you know? So let's just say this is us. And then, you know how an eclipse works is that, you know, this moon orbits around the earth, and every once in a while, it lands right in between the earth and the sun. And even though it's small, because of the way perspective works, it's large enough to actually at times block the sunlight from the earth, and it actually casts a shadow on the earth. And doubt can feel like that as well, can't it? Doubt can feel like an obstruction where you and I, it seems like we know what to think about God. We maybe even know God, have a relationship with him, but it feels like we can't even see him because of the doubt that has gotten in the way. What do we do? What do we do when doubt obstructs our view of God? The feelings that surface, they get in the way from what we know to be true. Now, the great thing is we've been looking at this book in the Bible. It's called Psalms. They're mostly written, they're songs or poetry, mostly written by King David. King David was an expert on knowing what to do with feelings. And this is good because doubt surfaces a lot of feelings in us, a lot of questions in us. And what we learn from Psalms is that we can't just dismiss our feelings. We can't just push them aside. No, they are very important. They're crucial. They are key to a relationship with God. But he also helps us understand that we shouldn't just bow to them either. We shouldn't shove them to the side and dismiss them, but we also shouldn't cave in to our feelings. And he gives us a way to look at our feelings, a way to look at our doubt that I find to be very, very helpful. We're going to look at one psalm today in its entirety. It's 6 verses. From the beginning of Psalm 13 to the end of Psalm 13, David makes a radical transition. And if you find yourself in the middle of plaguing doubt, I hope you will find this helpful. Here's how Psalm 13 reads. David begins with this question. Is this not such a direct and honest question? How long, Lord? God, how long? How long is this going to stay here? How long is this going to feel like this? How long is this going to contaminate my life? How long is this going to get in the way? God, how long? Says, how long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? Does it ever feel like God has forgotten you? David goes directly at God with this. He says, how long, Lord, are you going to forget me forever? How long are you going to hide your face from me? You know what's amazing about this? Is that when you lose something, you might tell someone, you might say, yeah, I lost it and I can't find it. Who gets the blame? It's on you. You lost it, right? I lost it. But in this case, the blame is fixed squarely on God. God, I didn't lose you. You are hiding from me. God, you are making it seem like that it's impossible to find you and see you and feel you. And not only that, but it's persistent. God, how long? Next verse says this, God, how long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? My thoughts are swirling around and I'm wrestling with them because they're telling me things like God can't be trusted and God's gone and he doesn't really care and he's not really able and he's not really someone that you want to even enter into a relationship with. And that's landing sorrow in my heart like a 100,000-pound weight. God, how long is this going to go on? He continues to, how long are you going to allow my enemy to triumph over me? I don't know what your enemy is. Maybe your enemy is doubt. Maybe your enemy is depression. Maybe your enemy is sadness. Maybe your enemy is hopelessness. Whatever it is, everyone knows what it feels like for that enemy to have control, to be looking like it's a victory. Then he gets extra direct in case that wasn't enough. And he says, look on me and answer, Lord my God. He finally calls God his God. When he begins this, he doesn't say that. He says, you, this is your fault. Finally, he's pleading. He says, look, would you look on me? You're supposed to be the Lord my God. This little phrase, look on me, when you translate it into English, it loses a little bit of its meaning because this little phrase in Hebrew was supposed to just mean, look at me. You ever yell at your kids like that and say, look at me, I'm talking to you. No, just me? All right, that's sad. I mean, how irreverent is that? To just say, God, look at me. I've been staring at the back of your head for it feels like forever. There's no traditional piety in this. I mean, you would think maybe if you've ever heard someone pray or have a conversation with God, you know, they speak in a different voice even. Have you ever heard that? Somebody just be talking to you and it's like, well, yeah, you go ahead and pray. And then it's like they turn into like King James himself, you know? It's like, pardon me, great Lord of the heavens almighty. We're mindful of your general authority and ability to squasheth whatever thou might squash. If you would bother, would you mind taking out the time if it fitteth you, your king, for myself? There's none of that in this. I mean, there's no bowing. There's no reverence. Just God. You are not doing what you said you would do. You're not keeping up your end of the bargain. And look at me when I'm talking to you. Where have you gone? You've been absent, and it seems like you're doing this on purpose, and it's hopeless. And God, worse than that, it's lingering. It's staying around. It's not getting better. How long, Lord? And he says this. He says, give light to my eyes or I'll sleep in death. It's a bit of a drama queen here, yeah? But maybe not. Maybe it really is life or death. When do you need light in life? When it's really dark. So evidently the situation had gotten so dim, the outcome had gotten so dark and hopeless that he was saying, God, if you don't give light to my eyes, if you don't bring some kind of hope to this, I'm going to die. It seems like a life or death situation. Maybe the wrestling and the persistent sorrow is robbing him of life. And joy. It's as if he's shaking his fist at God, saying, God, this is your problem. You caused it. Now fix it. He says, give light to my eyes or I'll sleep in death, and my enemy will say, I have overcome him, and my foes will rejoice when I fall. Now he tries a different tactic here. You ought to put this in your pocket. Use this if you ever need it. But now he's threatening God. He's basically saying, God, everyone knows that I am in this relationship with you. So God, yes, it will hurt me if you don't come through. But God, let me also warn you, if you don't come through, it's going to look bad on you. I mean, people are going to look at me and then they're going to look at you and be like, yeah, that's what we thought. God really can't be trusted. All of this honesty in just four verses. And what's amazing to me about this psalm is in the middle of this psalm, he's completely disoriented. You know, can't see straight, can't think straight. And he doesn't withhold. He brings all of that to God. And in the middle of it, he finds some clarity. He gets a correct orientation. God doesn't remove the problem, but it does seem like that God answers his questions. Somehow, his honesty leads to the kind of relationship that I know I want to have. Honesty to God, at least it seems, according to David, honesty to God creates a relationship that's strong enough to bear even the weight of doubt. Honesty to God, even about your doubts and your questions and your concerns, it creates some kind of relationship with God that seems like it's strong enough to bear even the greatest weight, the weight of doubt. You don't have to let your questions or your doubts be a barrier. They can actually be a bridge to a relationship, a deeper relationship, a better relationship, the kind of relationship that God really wants to have with you and me that he says is actually possible. We learn a lot from David. We learn that yelling works. That's good news. Have you yelled at God lately about your situation? It means that persistence works. That's good news. Somehow in the middle of this, he changes his tone. I don't know. It's almost like he put his pen down or said to the scribe, I'll come back in a little bit, and then went and somehow got answers, because there's a pivot that happens. There's a shift that happens. And he goes from, God, what have you done for me lately? Have you ever asked that question? God, what have you done for me lately? Huh? Somehow he shifts from that question to, God, what have you done for me ever? It's a very different answer. This is what that answer looks like. He says this in verse 5, but I trust in your unfailing love. God, how long, how long, how long? God, I'm going to die. My foes are going to be victorious over me. And then he finds his center and he says, but I trust in your unfailing love. Trust is powerful. Trust is powerful enough to sustain us through even the most hopeless situations. If you were to ask me, well, what's the opposite of doubt? I would say, well, certainty. Unfortunately, though, there are very few things in life that you and I will find certainty about. There will be way more doubts in life than there will be certainty. I think the antithesis of doubt is really trust. Choosing to trust in the unfailing love of God. This unfailing love is actually just one word in the Hebrew language. It's the word hesed. And it's used just in the Old Testament, the part of the Bible that's all before Jesus. It's used 250 times. And over half of those uses are found in Psalms. King David seemed like he loved this word hesed. Hesed represents not just any kind of love, not like the kind of flighty, fleeting love that we feel for waffles or for ice cream or for some sports team. Not that kind of love. No, it's the kind of love that's a covenantal, loyal love that God has for his people. David is trying to remind God, God, you are the God who has hesed for me, an unfailing love. God, you have never, ever written a check that bounced. All of them, God, were cashable. So why do we have reason to trust in that kind of unfailing love? Well, he tells us. He says, my heart also rejoices in your salvation. I'm going to trust in this unfailing love, and my heart's going to rejoice in your salvation. Salvation for us is different than what it was for David. David was hoping for salvation. We have assurance of salvation. He was looking forward to what God was going to do. We can look back on what God has done. And for us, our salvation is found in one person, God himself in flesh, Jesus. Faith, trust, it involves a certain set of beliefs. Trust is an attitude and a confidence, but at its core, trust is found in a person, in Jesus. He's the manifestation of God's unfailing love. And you can remind yourself in the middle of anything and everything, God, I don't know what you're doing right now. I don't understand why this is going on. God, it feels like you haven't done anything for me lately, but God, you have sent your son Jesus on my behalf to sacrifice, to give, to offer his life for me, for you. That's good news. And that's worth holding on to in the middle of swirling doubt and concern and emotion. In the middle of every season of how long, you can anchor yourself in the hope, the certainty that God's unfailing love has been seen and proven and displayed on a cross. And Jesus' resurrection offers us salvation. And so because of that, David ends with this phrase. He says, I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me. Somebody better say hallelujah, right? This is what David ends with. I don't really get this because he begins with doubt and he ends with praise. And so I'm going to sing of God's praise because he's been good to me. David was all about singing. I don't know if you like singing or not. It's kind of bizarre how much we sing in church. You just don't do this a lot in life, right? You don't go to many public places where people stand around and sing songs together, but singing is very powerful. Almost 100 times, David reminds himself throughout Psalms that I'm going to sing of the Lord's goodness. I'm going to sing a new song to God. He breathes in God's unfailing love, his salvation. He breathes out God's praise. It's a process that he goes through because singing in the middle of pain, it rekindles our courage to fight. Throughout history, we see any movement is marked by singing that brings resilience, promises us, it reminds us that there's a better day to come. And if you will bring the real you to the real God every single day, you can find that kind of courage to go, God, even if I don't feel like trusting, I know that I can trust you. And I'm going to breathe in your unfailing love and your salvation. I'm going to breathe out your praise. So what are our options in the middle of swirling doubt? Here's one. You can just wait, to be honest to God, until you have all your questions answered. You can do that. How long will you be waiting? I think a long time. I think your whole life. I don't know that you'll ever get answers to all your questions. I don't know that I'll ever get answers to all of my questions. Or there's another option. You and I can be honest to God, even with unanswered questions. You can be honest to God, even with your doubts. You can be honest to God about your doubts. You can take your doubts, the doubts that are a barrier to a relationship with God, and you can allow them to actually be a bridge to a relationship with God. You can have a conversation with God that is all about honesty about your doubts. Yes, because being honest about your doubt reveals to God what is true about you. Reveals to God, God, this is what I am feeling. God, this makes no sense. I don't understand. I don't get it. I don't see why this is happening. Maybe you had a dream that is unfulfilled. Maybe you had a family in mind and it's not working out. Maybe you had a career in mind and it's not working out. Maybe sickness has affected your body. Maybe that awful C word, cancer, has jumped into your life somewhere around and it's caused you to doubt. You can be honest about your doubts because it reveals something to God that's true about you. But as we learn from David, I'm telling you, there's a flip side to this coin because he begins with this complete and utter honesty to God about his doubts, but he ends by being honest in praise because somehow it reminds you of what's true about God. Being honest to God about your doubts, it reveals to God what's true about you, but praise somehow reminds God that you know what's true about him. It reminds me what I know is true about him. Because sometimes I can't see it because the doubt is in the way. Now, for those of you that are big fans of space. You know, this is just one kind of eclipse, right? There's another kind of eclipse because this orbits around here. And you can actually have an eclipse where the moon lands right over here. And in this case, the doubt moves all the way around to where you can see clearly because you can't remove it. You're not going to remove your doubt. But what you can do, you can actually move your doubt because praise does not remove our doubt, but praise can move our doubt. David's answer to doubt might throw you. His answer to doubt is to praise. Some of you are like, I don't sing that well. It's not really about singing. It's about your heart exclaiming with your mouth of what is true about God. When we praise, it fixes our attention on what we can see. Doubt is trying to make sure we know exactly what we can't see. Doubt fixates our eyes on what God is not doing, but praise actually moves our doubt to the place where we can now see clearly now, right? That's what praise does. And you have that opportunity. You don't have to be at church to have that opportunity. You can do that wherever you are. I'm going to give you just one more thought. Have you heard the phrase, throw shade? Have you heard this phrase? It's my favorite phrase in pop culture right now. I'll give you an example of throwing shade. Kanye West, okay? He's notorious for throwing shade. Who is Kanye always throwing shade on? Taylor Swift. Thank you. Thank you. 16-year-old right in the middle with the answer. That's right. Kanye's always throwing shade on Taylor Swift. I don't know why. He just kind of has a thing for Taylor. I don't know. Or a thing against Taylor. I'm not real sure. But he's always being critical of her. Somebody would come to Kanye, maybe you could walk up to Kanye and be like, Kanye, why are you always throwing shade on Taylor Swift? You're kind of dissing him for being critical of someone else. Well, let me just tell you what praise does. Praise throws. Some of you are like, oh no, he's not. Yeah, I am. I am. Praise throws shade on doubt. I'm for real. Praise actually, it shades the doubt. I'm not telling you that it's going to go away. Your doubt is not going to go away because it's always orbiting around you, is it not? But if you can, in the middle of your praise, if you can tell God what is true about Him, it will move your doubt to the place where you can see clearly. And then, all of a sudden now, praise allows you to throw shade all over your doubt. And you have that opportunity. No matter where you are, no matter what time it is. I hope that whatever you're in the middle of right now, if you're in the middle of a how long kind of situation, I hope that God comes through and answers exactly the way you want Him to. But even if He doesn't, I'm just telling you, it is possible for you to sustain, to even thrive in the middle of the worst of circumstances. And the only way to get there is if you will resolve yourself to say, God, I want to be a person that's going to praise You in the good and in the bad, no matter what. I want to be the kind of person that can pray just what David prayed. God, I trust in Your unfailing love, and my heart rejoices in Your salvation, and I'm going to sing the Lord's praise, for He has been good to me, even when you don't feel like it. David was constantly talking about how God had given him a new song, and I want to give you a new song. In fact, I've invited our band to come and play this song that I really do want to be a gift from us to you. That might be a way for you to remind yourself that in the middle of anything, it's possible to tell God that He's good no matter what. Let's pray together. God, we just ask You, God, even now that You would allow us, God, to see more clearly than we've ever seen before, that we could see a way out. That God, if there's something specific that we want you to do, God, I pray that every person would just be honest to you and say, God, I know exactly what you could do to fix this. God, you don't want us to withhold that. That's not irreverent for us to tell you that. God, you want to know. And so, God, I pray that every one of us would bring our honesty to you. God, in the middle of whatever it is we're going through, God, I pray that no matter what, that maybe we would find the resilience, God, to be the kind of person to say, God, I'm going to praise you, God, whether it's good or whether it's bad. And as we do that, God, I just look forward to hearing the stories of you moving people's doubt, God, because of your praise. God, it almost seems too good to be true, but God, somehow, someway, David found comfort in reminding himself what's true about you. God, thank you for being the kind of God that doesn't just accept, but invites, God, our doubt. I pray that you would help us to see it the way you see it. In Jesus' name we pray.